Okay, we're beginning on the top of Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday with the statement from Rav Huna when it comes to an animal that was roasted in its entirety on a spit. We said that there is a problem because of the chaleb that disperses amongst the animal. You have the fats that are asurim, they're inside the animal. When you roast it, then the fats go everywhere inside of the animal. And so we said, because of that, shiny chaleb to mepapeya, that chaleb is unique in the fact that it penetrates everywhere, and that's what makes it asur. And that is opposed to what Shmuel said, that it's only true with regards to the kidan asher that was cooked together with the yerech, that it causes a problem of shishim. On the other hand, nitzleba, if it was roasted, the meat with the kidan asher in it, then you can peel off the meat from the outside until you reach the kidan asher. And that would be mutar. We discussed in Tosafot that you would still have to take off possibly a gedei netilah around the gedei netilah and why the fats of the gedei netilah itself are not problematic. But given all of those factors, there's a difference between roasting the gedei netilah and the erech, where we don't worry about it spreading all over the place, versus when you roast the animal and we have the chaleb, where we see the chaleb dispersing everywhere and causing a problem in the entirety of the animal. The Gemara says, ubechaleb asur. Is that really true that when you have chaleb in the animal and you roast it, that it's problematic? There was this incident case brought before Rabbi Yochanan, in the Beit Knesset, in the shul, the main shul in Ma'on. It's exactly our case over here, where you have a goat that was roasted on the spit with its chaleb inside of it. And they brought the case before Rabbi Yochanan to see how we would pass him. You can peel off the basar until you reach the fats that are asurim, and you can eat the basar without any problem. That's similar to Shmuel's din with regards to Gidon Asher, but that's not similar to the din that we just brought from Rav Huna that said that when you have a gedi and chaleb, the chaleb spreads everywhere and everything is asur. So Mar says, Hau kachush hava. That was a skinny one. Tosfot over here brings two possibilities. This is what it means, that it was skinny. It says, Mefaresh Rabbeinu Tam, Kachush Avav, Lakach, Shari, Techelev Kachush, Enu Mefapeya. So Rabbeinu Tam says it's qualitatively a different type of chelev in this skinny animal. It had skinny animal, skinny fats. Those fats qualitatively are different than regular fats. Regular fats penetrate everywhere. These types of fats that are kachush, they don't spread everywhere. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan was mekel in this case. And then he said, "Vod yesh lomar kachush hava yesh bo ma'at chaleb ubatel b'shishim." Or the other possibility means that it was a skinny animal, which means it didn't have a lot of chaleb. And the quantitative answer, which is it just had less chaleb, since it didn't have sufficient chaleb to spread out through the animal, it's batel b'shishim. We know that there's more than 60 times of gedi versus this chaleb, and that's why it's fine. You have two views as to what the kachush means. Does it mean that the type of chaleb we're speaking about here qualitatively is not as penetrating as regular chaleb? Or is it just quantitatively there's just less chaleb that we have over here? That does raise the question, which Tosafot does answer in these answers over here, as to whether we say batel b'shishim. When you have bishul, bishul is the type of process that distributes things evenly or equally throughout whatever's there. So you're cooking something in a pot, everything gets flavored by everything that's there. There you could speak about batel b'shishim because the entirety of what is het there is affecting the entirety of what is isur, and then you can figure out, was it 60 to 1 or not? You're dealing with tzli, doesn't distribute everything equally. We say that the fats spread out through the animal. Does that really mean that everywhere it goes, there's equal distribution of those fats throughout the animal? Tzli doesn't have necessarily the same impact as bishul. And so the question is, can you invoke the principle of shishim over here? Tosafot is clear that he thinks you can. That tzli and bishul work and function the same way. And therefore it's batel b'shishim. And that's the way that the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kufhei paskins as well. There are a slew of Rishonim that agree that batel b'shishim applies even to tzli. On the other hand, there is a group of Rishonim that believe that when it comes to tzli, you cannot invoke the principle of batel b'shishim. You can only invoke it with regards to bishul. We have equal distribution of the flavors throughout. Again, we paskin like the view of the Balei Tosafot over here that it does work, but just understand that you could conceptually see a difference between tzli and bishul in this case. So that's one way to deal with the issue. Rav Huna bar Yehuda Amar, Rabbi Huda says the case in Ma'on was Kulia Bechelba Hava. It wasn't a whole gedi that had its chelav in it that was roasted. Rather, it was a kidney that was roasted with the fats around it. They didn't take off the chelav aklayot, which is one of the fats that need to be removed. And then they roasted the kidney with those fats on it over the fire. Visharya. And Rabbi Yochanan was matirit. The reason being, as Rashi notes over here, is because there is a krum. There is a membrane that is around the kidney. That's what we spoke about before, that the chelav of the kidneys actually has two membranes. There's an outer membrane around the chelav, and there's another membrane that sits between the chelav and the kidney. That membrane that sits between the kidney and the chelav protects the kidney from the fats penetrating into the kidney. And therefore, the kidney would be mutar b'achila, even though it was roasted together with the fats, because the membrane protects that from the fats going in. Tosafot does qualify that. He says, Venira should tzarech lasir min ha-kulia kedei klipa. You still have to take off the kulia itself, kedei klipa, a thin layer. Krum atzmo muvla min ha-chelev. The membrane itself is clearly problematic. The membrane itself absorbed chelev. And that means that you had adjacent to the kidney itself, the membrane that had chelev in it, touching the kidney. So you just had to peel off that top layer of the kidney that touched that area of the krum of the membrane. But absent that, you can eat the kidney without any problem over here. Now, Tosfot then deals with the other fats that are inside of the kulia, where we had a machloket earlier on, whether the white that is inside the kidney itself, are those fats problematic when you cut them out? If you cut out the chelav that's around the kliot, or even the chelav that's in the white calyces of the kidney, do you count that out as well? And a machloket is whether you just gomamo, you cut out the part that's out of the kidney, or even the parts in the kidney. Tosfot says, even those parts that are in the kidney, according to those mandamrim, it's not a problem over here, because that chelav is only midrabanan, and if you already cooked it with it in there, you just peel it off, and then you can eat the kidney, because it's only a din dirabanan. Here you'd have to ask the question as to whether this is unique to the kidney, which means that it's the membrane of the kidney is unique in this way, and it's thicker, or does this apply to any membrane that you have throughout the animal? That there are other eivarim, there are other times we have chelav against things with membranes. Do the membranes help you in these situations of tzali? And then you could ask the question, what happens if you have artificial membranes? What happens if you put plastic in there, if you put other items in there to surround it? It's very similar to the din by Shabbat, where we have the concept that, whether it's klisheni or irui klisheni, is mevashel keklipa, that it only cooks the size of a klipa, if you put something artificial around it. So for instance, you have a baby bottle that pour hot water onto it, if it's only mevashel keklipa, the baby bottle itself captures the big klipa, and then once inside of it is not mebushal, and wouldn't be a problem. And you could ask the same question over here with regards to types of plastics that are wrapped around items when you cook the animal. Does that protect them in this case from the isor either going out or going in because of those membranes? It always has to do with the question as to whether the kulia is unique, or can you extrapolate from the kulia to other areas and say that these membranes all work in terms of protecting the movement of flavor or issues between different areas. Ravin bar Ada Amar, he says, kill kit or kill beet be'ufis havo. It was a question about non-kosher fish that was found inside of a pot or a frying pan. Batu shalul Rabbi Yochanan. And they asked it to Rabbi Yochanan. Now, it's not clear here whether he's saying this was the case in Ma'on, or he agrees with the cases before Ma'on. He happens to note that this was another case that was brought before Rabbi Yochanan over there. Because this case doesn't speak really about fats. It's talking about a totally different question. Whether he believes that's the question that was asked, and it supplants or supersedes what we said until now, or is he just adding on an additional question that happened to ask the Rabbi Yochanan in that case? V'amar lehu, and Rabbi Yochanan said to them, L'tamei kfeila arma, that you should have a non-Jewish individual, kfeila. According to Rashi, Kunder Ben Gershom is a baker. So if a non-kosher baker taste it, you hear you have Rabbi Yochanan introducing us to something new, which is this idea that a non-Jew could taste it for us and tell us information. The question is, why is that sufficient? Or why do we believe him in these situations? So Rashi claims over here, V'ashme'inan demutar lismoch alav lifi tumo. Rashi says that Rabbi Yochanan is coming to teach us that you can rely on this non-Jewish baker to tell us the information if he's misiach lefit tumo. If he's not coming to give testimony, he's just telling us, he's giving us information. He happens to tell us what the flavor is like. Velo yodio, sutrichim lo ledamar isur v'heter. Don't tell him the reason we want him to taste it is because we want to know if it's asur or mutar. You just tell him, yeah, why don't you give a taste of this new concoction that we have over here, new soup that we're making, why don't you tell us what flavors you see in there? And then he gives you the information. So he doesn't think he's coming to be determinate. He doesn't think he's coming to paskin. So that happens to be, he's telling you what flavors that are in there. That's the way Rashi solved the problem. The Bali Tosafot over here say that it seems to be that we're not necessarily speaking about a lay person, but rather we're speaking about somebody who is an expert here. It says that you need to use a baker. Since he is an expert, a craftsman, lo mishaker, he's not going to lie, so lo yafsid umanato, because otherwise he'll lose his standing as an expert, meaning he has what to fear or what to lose over here. He'll lose his license, quote unquote. People won't believe him anymore, don't trust him to say that this is the flavor to make things because of the fact that he failed the test in this situation. So since he's afraid to lie, then we believe that he's going to tell the truth because he has downside from not telling the truth over here. So Rashi also says we're speaking about a baker over here. So it's not clear from Rashi that you could actually use a lay person, but he says the reason that it works is because he's Mesiach Lefi Tumo. He doesn't think he's giving you Psak or Eidut. Tosafot says that even if he knows he's giving you that, it's the fear of his losing his standing that will make him tell the truth, even though he knows that he's giving you information that's going to be determinate in terms of Yisur Heter. There are others like the Beit Yosef that try to bring those two together and say, when you're speaking to a lay person, it only works if it's Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Then it only works if he's not in the area of Psak. When you're speaking to an expert, even if he knows you're looking for a Psak Halacha, you can believe him because there he has a downside to not telling the truth. Or if they find out and they taste it afterwards and there's Yisur in there, then he's going to lose his standing with regards to these matters. So the use of a non-Jew will depend on, again, how you view the ability of the non-Jew to be believed in these situations or what we need in place in order to believe him. The Ramah paskins in Siman Tzadichet that we no longer use Kifela Arama. We never use non-Jews anymore to do tasting. Once, and we're going to see this later in today's daf and in tomorrow's daf, once we moved over to the Shishim as the test, then the Kifela Arama went out the window and we don't rely on asking a non-Jew to do tasting anymore. It's not something that's within our purview halakhically. Amar Rava, Merei Shava Kakashali. In the beginning, it bothered me, Had Tanya, that which we have in the Braita, Kedera, Shabisho Ba Basar, Lo Yivasho Ba Chalav. That if you have a Kedera in which you've cooked meat already, that means that absorbed into the walls of the pot is meat flavor. Then you're not allowed to then cook milk in there afterwards, because we're afraid that the flavors of meat that are in the walls of the pot are going to flavor the Chalav that's in there. Bim Bisho, if you actually do it, then you have to check and see whether the flavor of the meat actually affected the milk that was inside of there. Truma, lo yivasho bachulin. Similar situation in which you have truma that was cooked in a pot, and then you have flavors of truma, or maybe even more likely over here, you're dealing with actual truma that's in a pot, and you're mixing chulin with it. So now, ibn bishel, if you do such a thing, then you have to check whether there's flavoring over here. Now, what's interesting about chulin and truma is that both of them are mutarim. Just limits the scope of individuals who can eat it, which are the kohanim, would only be able to eat it. So there's no real iser in terms of cooking truma and chulin together, yet it says here you shouldn't do it. By basar b'chalav, I understand why you shouldn't cook them together, because you could be generating a problem of isur. If you know for sure that the chalav far exceeds the flavor of basar there, then technically there's no isur to cook them together, because the isur of basar b'chalav is only an isur of basar and chalav. There's no isur of cooking chalav with tam basar. That's not an isur. The problem only arises if the tam basar affects the chalav afterwards, then you have a problem of isur. But the bishul inherently is not problematic. It's only a problem of bishul when you have basar and b'chalav actually. So if you knew that you had 60 times the chalav versus what flavor was in the walls of the clay, it actually would not be problematic to cook the milk in there because it would be batel, and therefore there would be no exchange of flavor that would be problematic because the chalav would overwhelm the basar in the walls, and then it would be no problems of isur because there's nothing ba'ain that you are cooking. But here where we don't know, then there's a problem because of the flavoring of the item. By tumah v'chulin, it's a little unclear what the isur is in terms of cooking them together. So there's some that say that it's usher to the batel shuma lechatchila. You're not supposed to do bitul lechatchila because then you would actually make it possible for people to eat it who are not kohanim. Or you could argue that it's a din in truma. Truma has to be guarded. Mishmeret trumotai. Truma also is something you need to watch from tuma and tara. All these sorts of other dinim that are associated with truma. So we don't want you putting it in chulin and wiping out the character of the truma because you're supposed to be guarding the truma, not letting it get wiped out. So for that reason, you can't put them together. Bishlama, truma, if you have truma and chulin together, how do I test whether the flavors are impactful? Daim la kohen. You just get a kohen to come and taste it and tell you whether it is got truma and it doesn't have truma, the flavors affected it. El basar b'chalav man toim le. When it comes to basar b'chalav, who's the one who's going to taste it to tell you whether there is or is not a problem of tam over here? Hashto damar b'yochanan. Now that we have Rabbi Yochanan's din, that some chinan akfela arma, the chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan, that even though a non-Jew is not acceptable for testimony or for edut, and in general is not ne'eman in these issues, nevertheless in this situation he is ne'eman. So once he introduced us that possibility, either because he's mesiach lefi tumo, or because he's afraid of losing his standing, achanami samchinan kfeila amrma. Now I understand what you do with that situation of basar b'chalav. You call in the non-Jew to taste it and tell you whether there is tam or there isn't tam over there. The Amar Rav probably should read Amar Rava. Amor Rabbanan v'taima. Rabbanan told us that sometimes you have to check the isur b'tam, whether it's flavored. The Amor Rabbanan v'kfela. And sometimes the Rabbanan said that you check it with a non-Jew. The Amar Rabbanan v'shishim. And sometimes the Rabbanan said that we test it with 60 times. How do I reconcile these different mechanisms for figuring out if there's flavor? I have the non-Jew test, I have the shishim test, and I have the notein tam test. When are they each relevant? So hilkach, min she'enu mitno, when it's two different items, then the hetera bitaima. If it's something that's heter, we have two items that come together and it's heter, then you taste it. That's, for instance, truma and chulin, which are both inherently mutar. Their mixture only causes it that only a kohen could possibly eat it, not an Israel. But there's no isur here. Have the kohen taste it. So that's exactly when we use tama, no tain tam, or someone tasting it. That's done when both of them are heter, and it's min she'enu mino. The isura, we have min she'enu mino, and it's asur, then we use a kfela. For instance, basar b'chalav. Those ones that are together are isur. And therefore, once you have the isur together, the only option is to use a non-Jew in order to taste it, to figure it out. Ubin b'mino, when you have two of the same item that are together, the leka lemeka mataima, where flavor is no longer a possible choice. When you have kosher meat and non-kosher meat, you can't tell whether the non-kosher meat gave flavor in there because it has the same flavor as the kosher meat. Or you have non-kosher milk and kosher milk. Both of those taste the same. So taima, flavor is no longer an option. Number two is, it's possibly a sewer, so a Jew can't taste it, but it's not going to help you anyway, because there is no place. Inami, min she'enu mino, di sura. Or in a situation where you have min she'enu mino, is a sewer, that a Jew can't taste it. Teleka kfela, in an instance where we don't have a non-Jew to come in and taste it in that situation, bishishim. In that situation, then you'd use 60 times, either because it's min b'mino, and therefore there's no taste that is discernible, and that's why you have to use the test of 60 times. Or in a situation where it's isur, and we don't have the option of giving it to a goy to taste, then also shishim would be invoked in this situation. There actually is another scenario where you would invoke the din of shishim, and that's where you have two items that are mixed together of isur that are also isur to a goy. So for instance, Avir min Achai, which is a isur to a ben noach, like it is to Yisrael, then you can't go and ask the goy to taste the Avir min Achai to tell you whether it's in there or flavoring it, because it's just as asur for him as it is for you. The Achronim do clear whether that's really true. Do they have a din in bitul? Don't have a din in bitul? Is it lifnei iver? Lo lifnei iver? But that could be another scenario in which you would need to use the din of shishim. Those are the different applications of these tests to know whether the isur has affected the item or whether we have a problem over here. You can either use kfela rama, shishim, or notein tam, tasting it. Those are all different ways or mechanisms from doing it. What you do see over here from Rava is that min she'enu mino of isura is vishishim. But also, he says, min mino is a din in notain tam, or a din in kfeler ma, which means that he thinks that min mino has the same din as min sheno mino. That turns out to be a major machloket that we have with regards to min bimino. Is min bimino the same din as min sheno mino? Everybody agrees, but min sheno mino, notain tam, shishim, all of those tests apply. By min bimino, we have a machloket in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and we're going to see it later in our Masechta as well, as to whether min bimino is bimasho, or min bimino also has a din of notain tam. And that leads to a machloket apsak over here of Gedolei Olam. Rashi over here says that with regards to min bimino, pasaka kuntris k'Rabbi Yehuda, the pasuk like Rabbi Yehuda, min bimino, lo botil. Whenever you have two of the same thing, there is no bitul. Bitul requires different items in order to be batel. If you have two things of the same flavor in there, they're never batel. We learned this by the Ran and the Darim, that you need opposites in order to offset each other. Opposites can be opposites in iser v'heter, or opposites can be opposites in flavor. So that's how he explains the opinion that min bimino can also have bitul if it's iser and heter. But over here, we're saying that it's according to the one who says it's determined by flavor. And min bimino, there's no difference in flavor, therefore it's not batel. And Rav and Shmuel, Nami, Damrei, Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel also both paskin, kol yisrim, shutora, min bimino is bimashu. There's no bitelut, there is no bitul with regards to min bimino. And even though Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argue and Rav and Shmuel over there, Shmeina Nami, Labai V'Roba, the Batraya, will do Kamaka Rav and Shmuel. But we find that Roba and Abaya also paskin like Rav and Shmuel, and they're considered to be latter Amoraim, and therefore their Psak Alocha carries weight. And therefore Rashi, later on in the Masechta, we're going to get to it on Daf Kuftet, says that the Alocha is Min Bimino is Bimashu, and we paskin Alocha that way, based on all this evidence over here. The Balei Tosafot then bring, Rabbeinu Tam Omer, B'chol Zeinu Raya. None of what Rashi said, my grandfather said, is correct. Tein Alocha, Loka Rabbi Yehuda, V'loka Rabbi, V'loka Rabbi Shmuel. The Alocha is like none of these individuals. Ela Alocha ke Rabbi Yochanan, the Gabe Rav. Whenever you have a Machloka Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, Alocha ke Rabbi Yochanan. This is one of these instances where you have Rav and Shmuel on one side, and you have Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish on the other side. That means Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with Rav. The Alocha should be like Rabbi Yochanan. That means min bimino is batel b'shishim, batel b'notein tam. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, nami itlei lekaman. Yeshua ben Levi in tomorrow's daf is going to say that min bimino is also batel. And we have a principle that wherever Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says the Alocha is like someone, or wherever he says something, Alocha kimoto, even up against Rabbi Yochanan. Now over here, Rabbi Yochanan happens to agree with him. But even against Rabbi Yochanan, that'd be the case. That is not a rule of the Gemara, but rather it's a rule that's found in the Seder Tanaim v'Amoraim, that the Alocha is always like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Given all of those positions, then Rabbeinu Tam himself says, min bimino is batel. He argues on his grandfather and says min bimino should be batel. Now he does have exceptions to that rule. One exception comes with Chametz b'Pesach, that there, the Rabbeinu Tam agrees that min bimino would be asur, even b'mashu, and that's because possibly that chametz is chomer tveh. The chametz is a bigger problem. Number one is because of bayireh and bayimatzeh, plus lo b'dileh minei. People aren't separated from chametz, and therefore maybe we're machmer b'chametz. So over there he agrees with Rashi Tzak that min bimino is not batel. And also in instances where the Gemara in Avodah Zarah also says that when it comes to the Isurim of Tevel and Yayin Nesech, everything else is Benotein Tam, and those are the exceptions. So really there are three exceptions to the rule by Min Bimino, Chametz, Tevel, and Yayin Nesech. And there, the Rabbeinu Tam even qualifies the Yayin Nesech, that has to actually be Yayin Nesech that was Nit Nesech, Lifnei Avodah Zarah, that actually was poured out before Avodah Zarah in order to be classified like that type of Yayin Nesech. Here you have a Machloket of the Gedolei Olam as to whether the Alocha b'min b'mino is batel, like the Rabbeinu Tam, or it's never batel, and even by a mashu it's a problem like Rashi. And then they bring a slew of other poskim, like Rabbi Yehuda Gaon, Pasak, he also paskin, Davka b'chametz, kai Rova k'rav. When Rova says Alocha is like Rav, by Yisurim of min b'mino b'koshu, that's only by chametz. But Shari Yisurim, Yilchotak Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. The remainder of things, the Alocha is like Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. And then he also brings from the Bahag of Asfamya. The Baal Halachot Gedolot from Spain, Posek, the Chaticha B'Chatichot V'Notein Tam, that a piece of meat and another piece of meat is V'Notein Tam, Umiltu D'Rova, D'Amur Rabbonan B'Samach, Aitu L'Psak Halacha, and he brings the Argemara here, where Rava says that Min B'Mino is a din of Samach, L'Psak Halacha, and then the Baal Tosfo bring the big whammy, which is the Kuntres Gufe, Rashi himself, in the end of Bodah Zorah, Paskins, like Plukta Abai V'Rava, the Ilchotuk Rabbi Yochanan, the Saver Benotein Tam, that he also Paskins over there, that Min B'Mino is Benotein Tam. So therefore, based on all of that evidence, the Baal Tosfos would say, it must be that Min B'Mino is also subject to Notein Tam, just like Min She'eni Mino, and the exceptions to the rule will be Chametz, Yayin Nesech, and Tevel. The Yayin Nesek and Tevel we discussed in the Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah as to why that is. And Chametz we just noted because of the Chumrah of Chametz. So again, it's a major machloket. We'll bump into it again later in the Masechta. But just to be aware of that fact with regards to Min B'Mino, and it's affected by Rova's statement over here where he says that we use Shishim in the instance of a case of Min B'Mino. The other thing to know, which is something that we're going to bump into in tomorrow's daf, which is, when you have the option of Kfela Arma, is that an overarching heter, or is that just an additional test? Rashi is going to say in tomorrow's daf that when the Arma tastes it and he tells you that it is mutar, if it's still no tain tam, meaning that there's still less than 60 to 1 in there, he says we go to Chumrah. So Rashi says you need both a 60 to 1 relationship and the Kfela Arma telling you that there's no tam over there. If either one of those is missing, then we're going to go to Chumrah and say that there is a problem. So even at 61, if there's flavor, it's going to be a problem. Or if he tells you there's no flavor, but there's not 61, it's going to be a problem. The Baal Tosfot paskin against that view in Rashi and say that if the Arma says there's no flavor, you no longer need the 60 to 1. The whole point of 60 to 1 is to supplant the issue of no tain tam. When you know there's no tain tam, then you don't need the 60 to 1 anymore. And therefore you can rely on the Kfela Arma even in the face of less than 60 to 1. Right? How atmata dimlichu beresh galuta begida nashio. So there was this thigh that they salted in the resh galuta together with the gida nasheh. So instead of taking out the gida nasheh, they didn't roast it with it, they didn't cook it with it, but they salted it together. Ravina asar, Ravina says it's problematic. Rav Acha, it's either Barav or Ravacha Baravashi Shari said it was mutar. Now what's interesting about this machloket over here is that earlier in the Masechta, we just saw with regards to machloket between Ravina and Ravacha, the Gemara says that throughout Shas, whenever you have a machloket Ravina and Ravacha, that Ravina is always the Kula and Ravacha is always the Chumrah. With the exception of the three cases that were brought in the Gemara on Sadi Gimel Amud Bet, over there, we said those are the three times where Ravacha is the Kula and Ravina is the Chumrah. Well, this isn't one of those cases. And over here, it's Ravina is the Chumrah and Ravacha is the Kula. So how come over here we don't have the principle that we established before on Sadi Gimel Amud Bet that everywhere in Shas, Ravina is always the Kula? So the answer to that is that the way that it's framed on the Gemara and Sadi Gimel is that we have a machloket between them, Ravina Ravacha, and the Gemara says, Chad Shari v'chad Asar. One of them says mutar, one of them says asur. In that case, they don't give attribution to the positions. So Gemara says, this is the principle. When there's no attribution, Ravina is always the mekil, and Ravacha is always the machmir or the oser, except for these three cases. Over here, the Gemara gives attribution to the positions. It's not a question, one said this, one said that. No, we know Ravina said asur, and Ravacha said mutar. So that's not where the principle governs, and that's why this doesn't have to follow that principle that we had back on the Gemara, on Tzadi Gimel Amud Bet. So now the Gemara explains, Atu Shailu Lamar Baravashi, they brought the case before Mar Ravashi, Amar Lahu Abba Shari, says my father Ravashi was Mati Ravir, Amar Lai Ravacha Barav the Ravina Maidateich. So now Ravacha Barav, that's why they changed the Girsa before to Rav, and says now to Ravina Maidateich, the problem with that obviously is that if they're speaking to Mar Baravashi, they're at the tail end of the Amoraim. Mar Baravashi is the last of the Amoraim, like an eighth generation Amora. Rav is a first generation Amora. So then how is Ravacha Bari Rav speaking to Ravina if we're talking about a case that's much later on? Elim Kane, you separate between the issues and say that there are different individuals involved. So that is what's going on in terms of the Girsa Ot over here. So Rav Achar bar Rav says to Ravina, what do you think? Damar Shmuel, you think because Shmuel said, Meliach, Harihu Keroteach, salting is the equivalent of eating. Meaning that there is the equivalent of cooking when you salt something, Kavush. When you pickle something, Harihu Kemivushal. It's as if it was cooked. Rashi, wherever it says, Kavush, Harihu Kemivushal, Rashi always explains that the Kavush means it's in chometz. It's in something that is pungent in nature, meaning that it's inside of vinegar, vitavlin, and it has spices there, vikavashban, and he is pickling it. So Rashi sees it literally as a pickling process, a brine of sorts, and that's when we say kavush areikim mevushal. Many of the Rishonim bring alternate view based on the Gemara that if you leave meat soaking in milk overnight for 24 hours, that's considered to be kavush. Well, milk is not vinegar. Milk is just a liquid. Therefore, many Rishonim believe that the kavush over here doesn't necessarily mean pickling. It just means that it sat, it marinated in the liquid for that period of time. It doesn't have to be chometz, doesn't have to be vinegar, it doesn't have to be spiced. It just has to be a liquid that it sat in for 24 hours. That's considered to be kavush, and that's our yukumibuchal. The way that you'd have to answer for Rashi is that milk, after 24 hours of meat sitting in it, also turns into a more pungent type of milk. So because of that, the souring of the milk, maybe that's how Rashi would deal with it. But know that kavush over here is subject to that machloket. It's what exactly kavush is. So now, he says, now that you think maliach harihu karoteach, is that why you're saying over here that the gidon hasheh is problematic? Because it's as if you cooked it, then the gidon hasheh together with that leg. V'amar Shmuel, lo shanu ela shenit bashel ba. Shmuel already told us that was the beginning of the Gemara, and yet at the end of yesterday's daf, that if only when you cook it together is it problematic. But if it was roasted, you just peel off the meat and you can eat it without a problem. Until you reach the gid and a. So what are you thinking? You're thinking when it says and you salt it, it's like roteach, means like it's like cooking. So now you tell me it's like cooking and not like roasting. So that's why I said it's a sore. Listen to the statement of Shmuel. Kavush, harehu kemivushal. There is a contrasting statement over here. Meliach, harehu keroteach. Meliach is like something that's heated up. Kavush, pickling, is kemivushal. That tells you that whatever roteach is not mivushal. Because otherwise you could have used the same description for both of them. You could have said meliach and kavush, harehu kemivushal. The fact that he separated the dinim and said kavush is like mivushal, that means meliach is not kemivushal. Michlal de roteach de tzli kamar. That means when you say salting, salting is the equivalent of roasting, not the equivalent of cooking. So you simulate the effect of roasting the item when you put it in salt. That's what we dealt with the Rabbeinu Tam before with regards to tzli, that if you can simulate the effects of tzli by putting it in salting, there's another way to kasher things that require roasting, like liver, heart, all the things that have a ton of blood in them, then maybe you could create the same head there by slicing them open and roasting them, and then slice them open and putting them in salt. According to Rabbeinu Tam, both of them work equally. Here's your evidence to that. Meliach harehu ketzli, because it works just like tzli. But then he says, that's what I'm telling you. Miklal derotech tzli kamar, that means kashel. It's a strong refutation of the position of Ravina, because over here it's kerotech like tzli, and Shmuel already paskin that tzli doesn't make the whole thing asur. You can peel away the meat. You can see over here the shilt, though, it actually has a different gears over here. Shmamina. Not just kasha, but shmamina. It's conclusive that the meliach is keroteach, which means that it is kitzli, and therefore it should have been totally mutar. Amar Rabbi Chanina, kishehen misha'arin. When you determine how much flavor is being put into the item, misha'arin berotev, ubekipa, ubechatichot, ubekedeira. All of these items contribute towards the heter. All of these items, when you're trying to figure out if the flavor is affected by that which is there, you have the offsetting factors are the item itself, plus the gravy, plus the kippah, which is really the sediment at the bottom of the pot, the stuff that settles down at the bottom of the stew, ubechatichot, the basar itself, ubekedeira, and the pot itself also contributes towards the heter versus the isur. Now, with regards to the pot, igadami ubekedeira tzma, some say that we look at the actual pot itself. Some say it's only that which is absorbed into the kedeira, that is then additive in terms of the heter. So now the one tzad is that the kedera itself is actually going to measure volumetrically what the kedera is, and then the kedera will contribute to the 60-1 that you need over here. Tosafot is bothered by that. He says, Tema, im shir ovi akteira, if you're measuring the thickness of the walls of a kteira, say for instance it has a kteira chamishim zeitim. That's 50 zayit big. And then he puts water in there that's only worth 10 zeitim worth of it. And then you put a kzayit worth of chelev into that water. There's no way that you're not going to have flavor of chelev in the water. Also, it says it's just impractical. Just because you have this massive pot, and it's got thick walls, and it's got all this volumetric size to it, and now you say, okay, now we put in a little bit of water, a little bit of chelev, and we're going to say, oh, it's going to be batel yedei dekteira. You look at reality. You look at the empirical test. It's just not going to work. So Tosfot is really bothered by how could you even suggest that that's the case. So he says, near the Faresh, to Hakamari could go into Leta, the Isura Be'ene. It's got to be a case where the Isur is not extant. But there's a Kazayit of Chelev of flavor that's in the walls of the pot. And the pot already had Heter in the walls, and now there's also now Isur in the walls. And now he's cooking more Heter in there. That's when we're going to say the pot has impact, because the whole Isur is already only trapped inside of the walls of the pot. There, the walls of the pot should have enough Kamino, or the thickness of the walls, because you have Heter in there, Isur in there, you have all these other things in the walls. They should be contributory in that case, because they will affect how much is being niflat into the item that's in the pot now, because the size of the pot, the thickness of the walls, all that will make a difference. And that's where Tosafot says we invoke this principle. But it's not a generic principle. It's not a generic din that the size of the pot would always matter. That's the one side. The other side is madibolo kedera, that which the walls of the kedera absorb, meaning that we don't look at the total volume or size of the pot. We look at what would be missing when you put something into a pot. So for instance, you put heter into the pot, and if you just left it there without cooking it, certain amount of that would be absorbed into the walls of the pot. That's the amount, and then you would say is counted towards the 60 times. Rashi over here quotes both views, well, view of kedera and the view of nivla of the kedera. And then he says, since we don't have a decision as to which one is right, we're dealing with the dindo raita, and in dindo raita, we go the chumra. So therefore, you're going to have to be choshesh for what's nivla in the walls of kedera, not the size of the kedera itself, because that would be the chumra. And then Rashi invokes what we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, and he goes even further, the chumra, and he says, what are you telling me, that the walls of the pot only absorb heter? They don't absorb isur? They absorb the same amount of both of them, I mean on a ratio basis. Whatever isur and heter are in the pot, they're also being absorbed into the walls of the pot. So the walls of the pot, that which is absorbed into the walls of the pot, should have no impact over here, because they're just on a ratio basis, have the same amount of isur and heter that's in the pot itself. And therefore Rashi says, the pot makes no difference, we don't count it at all. And it's not mivatel anything over here. Again, that's based on what we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow. Rashi here is clearly paskening the chumra. Even though what's very interesting over here is that isura is the oraita, does lean on the chumra, it's not necessarily true that the isura is the oraita. Because if you have rov over here, min haTorah, it's bato berov. Shishim, no tein tam. All these other items are really seemingly only a din derabonon. So now, what that seems to indicate is that tam ki ikar is a din d'oraita. Now we saw already Rashi in other places says that tam ki ikar is only midrabanan. So does the Rambam. The Rambam also passes tam ki ikar is only a din d'rabanan. In that case, it'd be hard to argue that over here you have an issue of d'oraita. But Rashi, like he does here, and we saw in yesterday's daf, Rashi seems to be in this sugya indicating that tam ki ikar is d'oraita. And therefore, since we're dealing with an issue of d'oraita, we're going to go to chumrah with regards to this. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Kol yisurim shebetorah mishe'arinan kilo ein batzal v'kaflot. We look at any isur in the Torah, we want to know whether it's notein tam or not. We look at it as if it was an onion or it was a leek. So we take the isur, we replace the isur with an onion or a leek, and now we say, did that onion or leek give flavor to the basar that was in the pot? That's how you determine, min b'mino, whether it is giving flavor or not giving flavor. So all Yisurim in the Torah use this as the test. Now, Rashi notes over here, Levad me Gidin Asher, with the exception of Gidin Asher, because our Mishnah tells us by Gidin Asher, you use basar and lefet. You use meat and turnips. And the meat is the Isur, and the turnips are the heter, and you figure out whether there's flavor. So Rashi says it's the, with the exception of Gidin Asher. Balei Tosafot say, Midalo Nakat Kabasar Belefet, the fact that he doesn't say Kabasar Belefet, like we saw in our Mishnah by Gidin Asher, Mashma de Ein Shiur An Shaveh. Then he says, makes it clear that whatever that is said in the Mishnah is different than what's being said over here. There's a different din in the Mishnah than is over here, like Rashi notes, Levad Migidin Asher. And Tosafot says, that might make sense to get Loi Tama Kulehai. Even if you believe that Gidin Asher is no Tain Tam, it doesn't give off flavor like other things. And therefore we use a weaker test by Gidin Asher. We're talking about Basar and turnips versus Basal and leeks, which are very pungent and something that will flavor things in a more extreme way. Because over there we're dealing with items that have real flavor to them in Isur, not just the Gidin Asher, which is small flavoring. So Tosafot says he thinks it makes sense over here to differentiate and that they must be different sizes. Now, the fact that in the end they both say shishim when you can't do it is interesting. Because in the end they both come to this level of shishim. So does that mean they argue? Because one is saying meat and lefet is enough to get you and shishim is the equivalent of that. And one is saying batzal and the leeks and then shishim is enough. That's one way to look at it, that they're actually arguing then in that issue. Or do you say that shishim is not really an issue of no tain tam? Shishim is this maximum number. It's like saying a million to one. Just a number that's so big that we assume there's going to be no tain tam. Doesn't mean that it's the equivalent of onions and leeks in this item. It's not the equivalent of basar and lefet. It's just a number that's big enough to give you bittul. And then even if you say both of them have a din of shishim, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily arguing about how you test for flavor. So now, Amrei Lei, Rabbi Avada Abaye, L'sharinu b'pilfilin, v'tavlin. Why don't you use peppercorns and spices to test it out? Tafilu b'elef lo b'talin. Because they even, 1 to 1,000 are not batel. I mean, that's the type of flavor that spreads throughout the item. And even the smallest amount of a spice will spice or flavor the entire item. Why are you using batzal and kaflot and leeks to do the test? Why don't you use something that's even more flavorful? And then your test would be even of a higher type of test. That they figured out that when it comes to Isurim, there's nothing that exceeds an onion and a leek in its ability to give flavor. The maximum flavor that's given by anything that's Isur is going to be equivalent to or below Basal and Kaflot. You don't have to go as high as spices and peppers. Now obviously if they were issues of Isur with regards to those items, you'd have to test with those items. But absent that, there's nothing within Isur that has more flavor or is more pungent than a Basal and a Kaflot. And therefore if you test with it, for sure you're going to get the right answer, even L'chumra, because it's going to be more pernicious the taste than even other items, and that's why onions and leeks are used to flavor many things, because they have an ability to flavor in a large and extreme way. And so that will cover us on all bases. You're safe. If you test that and there's no flavor, then for sure the Easter is not giving flavor over here. Amar of Nachman. Gid bishishim. The gid in Asher is batel bishishim. Ve'ein gid min minyan. And the gid is not in the minyan. So again, this is where Tosafot discusses whether if you say Gid B'Shishim, and before we said that Isur is B'Shishim, are they then arguing about what's the flavor test? Because they're both using Shishim as their basis, yet we have the difference in their flavor test. So Rav Nachman over here says Gid B'Shishim, and Gid Min HaMinyan. The Gid itself doesn't count towards it, because the Gid itself is the Isur. So it's 60 of Heter besides the Gid itself. Chal, when you're dealing with an udder, B'Shishim, it's 60 times the chal min haminyan, and the chal itself counts towards the 60 times. Now the problem with an udder is not the udder itself. The udder itself is totally fine. The problem with an udder is the udder has milk in it that was a residue of a resident there when the animal was shechted. So the milk inside of the udder technically is parif because it never exited the behema, and therefore it has a din of not milk but a din of a liquid, and it would be totally mutar. Midr Rabbanan, they were oser it like milk, like chalav, and therefore now you have a problem of basar b'chalav. So now if you cook an udder with other pieces of meat, then the milk from that which is found in the udder is now going to spread out throughout the pot. The udder itself, what is the din of the udder in this case? The udder itself was never asur, it was basar, just like all the other basar that's there. So his point is that because the problem is the iser, the milk, then the chal itself adds to the amount of basar that you have there in order to be mevatel the milk that's inside of the udder. And that's why the chal is min haminyan. The udder itself counts towards the 60 times that you need. Beitza, when you deal with an egg, bishishim, it's 60 times, ven beitza min haminyan. And the egg doesn't count. If a non-kosher egg that fell into something, then it's 60 times of after versus that egg. And the egg itself does not count towards this. Tomorrow's daf will discuss why you would have had a hava mina, but maybe eggs would be a little different. Or maybe you shouldn't count the whole egg towards the isur. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak b'rei d'Rabbi Meshashia, uchal atzmo asur. Uchal atzmo is problematic, meaning the udder itself is asur. V'inopal k'deira cheret oser. And if it falls into another k'deira, it would make it asur. So the chal itself, even though it adds towards the heter to be 60 to 1, nevertheless, it itself is a problem of isur. And that problem of isur is if you take it now and put it into another item, it's going to create isur in the other item. Now, the Baal Tosafot say, if the chal itself is asur, then why don't you say chatichat nasei nevela? That once the chal becomes asur because it has flavor of milk in it, then it becomes like a nevela. And then how can it count towards the heter if it itself is considered to be a nevela, it's considered to be isur? The Tosfot explains that the isur that's generated over here, or the problem with the chal, is not a normal case of tam inside of the chal that makes it into chatichat nasei nevela, but rather the fishyesh bo gumot. It has cracks and crevices in it. Ve'achalav kanus l'tocho. And the milk gathers in those spaces. Ve'esh bo'to chalav tam basar. And the problem is not the chal itself, but the milk that's inside of it that turns into a flavor of basar. Ve'ef shalav frishom in a chal. The problem is you can't get that milk out of the chal. The problem over here is not a problem of inherently the chal now is flavored by the milk. And now you have chatichat nasei nevela. That was the case. How could you ever count it towards the 60 times of etter? But rather, there's milk that gets into the crevices and the cracks of the udder that you can't get out. And then that milk is affected by the cooking of the chal itself, and it makes it into basar bechalav. That milk then becomes and gets a flavor of basar. And that's the problem when you put the chal into another item, is that it makes it into something that is of isur. And that's what's being described here by Rabbi Yitzchak b'rei d'Rabbi Meshashia. Even if you tear it open at that point, it's not going to help anymore because it wasn't torn open in the original cooking. And even though, as Tosafot points out, it's pretty clear in the end that all the milk is exuded by this udder, and if everything there is already exuded in that cooking process, then why does the chal remain asur? Since it wasn't torn open in the original state, the milk that was trapped inside of the chal became flavored like the basar, and that makes the chal asur, even though at this point all the milk has now been distributed throughout whatever is cooked there. Even though all the chalav has been exuded or out of the udder at this point, nevertheless it's staying in the k'deira. It's batel, and that's why it's okay. That if your matir, the chal itself, people end up eating it before all the milk is exuded, and therefore we don't allow them to eat it even after all the milk has been exuded. And therefore what goes there, even though in the end the chal should be okay, nevertheless, because in the beginning it's not okay, and when the milk is in there, tearing it open is not going to help it until it's fully cooked into the process. For that reason, where it goes there that you can't eat from it in the end because people might not bring it to that end of the process, and therefore they're going to be eating something that has problem of milk in it. The Baal Tosafot note over here, Chal Atzmo Asur, he says, Yesh Farim Degarsi Asur Heicha Delo Kare U'Bishlei B'Hadi Basar. That's only true if you didn't cut it open and then cook it together with the basar. Sounds like from that girsa that if you did cut it open, there would be a way to deal with the milk that's embedded inside of the udder, and that would make it that the chal itself is no longer asur. Only when you didn't cut it open and allow for the free flow of the milk, that's when the milk that's trapped in there causes a problem for the chal. But otherwise, once you cut it, that releases the milk and it's not a problem.
And so based on these two Baalei Tosafot, we get the psak of the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Sadi and Yordeya, which is the chal itself is only asur midivrei sofrim, which means it's only a din derabonon because of the basar that nitbashel bechalav, that's not really chalav min haTorah. Therefore, if you cut it open, tear it open, allow the milk to drain out, then you can roast it and eat it. And if you do even more extreme work with it, which is that you cut it both length and widthwise, and then you swoosh it into the wall so that it squeezes all the milk out. Then you can even cook it together with basar. But if you have a udder that you never cut, then you cannot cook the kachal together with that which is inside of it. If without taking that into consideration, you ended up cooking it together with the milk inside of it, if it's bifnei atzmo, meaning that if it's all alone, just the udder being cooked there, and certainly if you were roasting it, then you can eat it. But if bishlo and basar acher, if you cooked it together with other meat in a pot, which is the case that we have here, and that's what Tosfot is commenting on, that it has to be something where you didn't tear it open, and now you also cooked it together with other basar, then we include the chal in the 60 times to determine whether there's enough meat there to override the milk that's inside of it. And the chal itself, the udder itself, counts towards that 60 times. But even given that, the chal itself now becomes a sur when you cooked it together with the other meat that's in there. So all the other meat will be mutar because there's 60 times. The milk's not a problem, but the chal itself will become a sur. And that's what the Balei Tosafot is speaking about here, that the chal becomes a sur, even though technically it should be mutar because you have 60 times and the milk should have no impact. And that is because we are goes there at the end to say, even though it should be mutar here, be a sur, because otherwise people will be matir the chal with the milk in it, even before it's been totally exuded, and batel b'shishim with other pieces of meat. And that's the locha that we saw here, that it counts towards the 60 times, but the chal itself remains a sur, and therefore if it falls into something else, it's a chatikha shenaset neveila, and it'll be oser the other thing, because it itself still remains a sur. And then there's a machloki between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. If there was less than 60 times in there, if that chal then falls into another pot, do the chal itself count towards the 60, which the Ramah says no? The Shulchan Aruch says yes, in order to be mevatel, the milk that's in the chal, in the new pot that it fell into. Amar Rav Ashi, haki avinu bei Rav Kana, when we were in the Beit Midrash, or the house of Rav Kana, yubayalon, kimi sharinan, when we're figuring out about the chal, the 60 to 1 over here, imidi de mi sharinan, do you need 60 times the chal itself? Or do we need to do 60 times that which is exuding, I mean the milk, which is the problematic part of it? Is that what you need 60 times for? So he answered, Shita, the 60 times has to be 60 times the udder. If you're saying what it was exuded or the liquid that it gave out, which would have been problematic, how do we ever know how much liquid it leached in there to know what the 60 times is? We don't have the item in front of us. We don't have any information over here. How do we know what type of flavor was imparted, how much was exuded by this item? So of course, when we're looking for 60 heter versus the item, we're saying the item itself and not what's the item or flavored in there. So the Gemara says, El Me'ato, if that's the case, then, Im Nopal the Gdera Acheret, Lo Yaser. If it falls into a different Gdera, it shouldn't be Asur, because you have 60 times the udder itself. That means the udder is now being made into heter. If that's the case, once you have 60 times the chal itself, why when the chal falls into something else, is it a problem? It's one thing if you add 60 times the items that are exuded by the chal, then you had enough to neutralize that flavor that came out, but the chal itself was not neutralized because there wasn't 60 times the chal. And that's why when it falls into something else, it's a sur. On the other hand, if you believe that you have 60 times the chal itself, and therefore it's totally heter, once it's now become heter, why when it falls into something else does it have any impact whatsoever? But then Tosfot brings an alternative view, which is that the Elamiato is going back on that chal min haminyan, which makes it clear that you're not counting it as a chita bisura, and it's not a sur ela because of the chalav that is embedded in that, not because it itself is isur, which makes it clear that the problem is not the udder itself, but that which is being exuded by the udder. And if that's the case, then when it falls into something else, why does it make the item a sur if the udder itself is min haminyan and is a din of heter? Where it says, no, that's not a problem, that's not a question. Came into Amar Yitzchak, Brei Amar Shashia, Uchal Atzmo Asur. That he says that the chal itself is always asur. Even if you have 60 times, the chal itself remains problematic, as we already discussed in the Balei HaTosafot, because of the milk that's trapped inside of it from the initial cooking over there, that doesn't become batel, and therefore, everything in the pot is okay, and the chal remains asur. That's midrabanan. It's a problem. Shavu rabanan ked chatichat neveila. The rabanan made it into a chatichat neveila. That's why when it leaves, even if you have 60 times the chal itself,
it still has a problem because it's considered or classified like an avela, and therefore it drops into something else, it's going to make whatever other item into something that is a sur. So there actually be a nuance that you need 60 times what is trapped or could be trapped inside of the chal, and the chal will help you towards that 60 times. And again, this is all midrabanan because we're only speaking about milk of an odor, which is also only a din derabanan. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the bottom of Sadi Zayin Amud Bet.